From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today we're going to spend the first part of the program talking about Ken Griffin. He ranks 41st on the Bloomberg Billionaires Index, which puts his fortune at $29.3 billion, far and away the wealthiest man in Illinois. It's also more than 428,000 times the median household income in Illinois. With that money, he's bought a lot of real estate, including a $238 million penthouse overlooking Central Park in New York City. At least in 2019, that was said to be the most expensive residence in America. He's also put some of that money to philanthropic use, including a $125 million donation to the Museum of Science and Industry, which will take his name in a couple of years, following in the tradition of Chicago cultural institutions named for members of the Field, Adler, Shedd, and Notabart families. But Griffin has not limited his spending to real estate, museums, and other flights of billionaire whimsy. He's also gotten involved in Illinois politics, and in a big way, donating tens of millions of dollars to support the campaign of Aurora Mayor Richard Irvin in the Republican primary for governor. My thesis today is that Ken Griffin is the most important figure in Illinois politics whose name has never appeared on a ballot, at least not yet. So today we're going to try to answer the questions, who is Ken Griffin and what does he want from Illinois government? Joining me to talk about this are four reporters who looked at Ken Griffin from a variety of angles. Steve Daniels is senior reporter at Crane's Chicago Business, where he covers banking, insurance, and utilities. Steve, welcome to the 21st show. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Shruti Singh is a Chicago-based reporter and editor for Bloomberg News. Thank you for being here as well.
Thanks for having me.
Felix Salmon is the chief financial correspondent at Axios and the host of the Slate Money podcast. Felix, longtime listener, welcome to our show. Thank you for being here.
I'm very excited.
And Dave McKinney has covered Illinois government and politics for decades, most recently for public radio station WBEZ in Chicago. Dave, always good to talk with you.
Hey, Brian, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks, Dave. So as ever, listeners, you can also join our conversation at 800-222-9455. What do you want to know about Ken Griffin? What do you think about his role in Illinois politics? 800-222-9455 is the number to call. That's 800-222-9455 or tweet us at 21st Show. So for now, I want to put a pin in the politics and just talk about how Griffin got where he is. Shruti Singh, can I begin with you? Who is Ken Griffin in the world of business and finance?
So Ken Griffin has a huge hedge fund and that he started in about 1990. And subsequently, he's also started Citadel Securities, which is a huge market maker in equities, ETFs, and just a real icon in financial markets.
And Felix, where do you put Griffin in the context of the sort of national billionaire masters of the universe type people?
He's an interesting one because he's one of the very few billionaires in that class who's really made his money in income. Like, he has actually made all of those billions by earning all of those billions in the markets. Most of the billionaires we come across on a day-to-day basis, whether it's someone like Elon Musk or even Mark Zuckerberg, someone like that, they made their money by starting a company and then putting the company on the stock exchange, and their stock is worth lots of money. That's how like Bill Gates makes his money. Citadel has never been public. There was talk about it at some point, never happened. And most of Ken Griffin's money is just really made the old-fashioned way by making $1 billion here and $1 billion there, and eventually it adds up. So, you know, that really sets him apart. And I think he looks a little bit jealously at some of these new crypto billionaires who just, you know, made lots of money by buying tokens and seeing them go up in value. But he's made it like a penny at a time on billions and billions of like tiny, tiny little super fast individual stock trades.
That's interesting. It suggests maybe that's why he cares more about income taxes maybe than certain other people in his class, certainly in Illinois. Steve, anything you want to add? I mean, Griffin is said to be Illinois' richest man. He's made some significant donations, as I mentioned. Anything you want to add to our profile so far?
Well, I would simply say that his net worth went up exponentially, it's not entirely due to money he's just making on his own. It was due to the first major outside investment he took in Citadel Securities, which was the first time put a value on Citadel Securities from a major outside entity. And that's what sent his net worth, you know, soaring to nearly $30 billion. So there's a paper value on Citadel Securities that makes up a lot of his net worth right now. So I would just add that. And I would also say that Citadel Securities is likely on a track to public ownership in the next few years, which will put him in that Zuckerberg, Elon Musk class, albeit probably not at those levels.
Dave, thinking about, you know, the way Griffin has made his money, I'm sure you remember the way former Governor Bruce Rauner would almost spit when he talked about Governor J.B. Pritzker having inherited his wealth, right? Do you get the sense there's some of that in how Griffin relates to Pritzker?
Well, I mean, there's definitely a rivalry there, Brian, and it's intensely personal. And you know, look, it's hard to envision, like, Pritzker's net worth, I think, is somewhere around $3.5 billion. So, I mean, you know, in the race for who's richest, Kenneth Griffin has run around the block a few times on Pritzker. So there's no contest there. But I think that he looks at Pritzker and he just, if there is a jealousy, it's about the way he's ascended to power and the fact that he's accumulated power in the way he has. And yes, he's gotten wealth handed to him through inheritance, but he's also developed wealth in his own, Pritzker. So, the rivalry there is fascinating to me. It really, as we'll talk about later in the segment about the politics of it, it's just a spectacle. It's something unlike, I think, going on. And there's nothing quite like this going on anywhere else in America, where we have, you know, this clash of titans between these two billionaires.
Fascinating. All right, let me take a moment to reintroduce my guests. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st show. We're talking about Ken Griffin, who is the richest man in Illinois and the big financial backer behind one of the men seeking the Republican nomination for governor. That's Richard Ervin. He's spent tens of millions of dollars on that. We're going to talk more about that, but we're just kind of establishing a baseline of who Griffin is. We're speaking with Dave McKinney, who covers state government and politics for WBEZ. Shruti Singh, who is with Bloomberg News based in Chicago. Steve Daniels is at Crane's Chicago Business. And Felix Salmon is with Axios and host of the Slate Money podcast. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. Felix, one of the reasons I wanted to have you in this conversation is I know you have a special interest in following the art market. And I just thought, just to kind of round out who Griffin is, you put him in a very small class of global art collectors, right?
Absolutely, at the very, very top of global art collectors. He spends hundreds of millions of dollars a year on art, and he is a trophy hunter. He really tries to get the very best art by the very best artists. He's got this incredible collection of Cezanne, Jasper Johns, Basquiat, de Kooning, and he's very happy to pay $100 million for a single painting. So there aren't very many people in the world who do that, and he is at the top of a very short list.
Hundreds of millions of dollars. I just, that in the context of tens of millions of dollars he's spending to really just completely reshape the governor's race in Illinois, it's kind of fascinating. Can you also briefly just recount the story of the Constitution Dow, the copy of the Constitution that he bought?
Yeah, so like this is, I mean, you mentioned billionaire whimsy earlier on, and this is classic billionaire whimsy, right? So Ken Griffin is someone who likes collecting trophies, and among them is grand paintings. Among them also, as you mentioned, is grand houses in various cities around the world. And then one day, this early copy of the Constitution came up for auction, and it started getting a bunch of traction in the sort of online crypto world for reasons that no one entirely understood. And a bunch of crypto people decided to pool together all of their little crypto coins and try and buy this copy of the Constitution. And Ken Griffin just kind of laughed at them and said, you know, I sneer at your $40 million or whatever. And he just came in with the top bid and said, I'll just buy it myself and do exactly what you are going to do with it, which is donate it to a museum. And instead of, the only difference is like he got to choose the museum rather than them choosing the museum. So he wound up donating it to Crystal Bridges, which is, talking of billionaires, owned by another major billionaire from the Walton family.
It's the Walmart Museum of Art, right?
Exactly, which is a genuinely good museum of art, by the way. I hasten to add, although Ken Griffin's collection is probably worth more. So this was a classic kind of half power move, half by Ken Griffin, just saying like, all you thousands of people trying to club together to do something fun, here's me, billionaire. I can drop $40 million on a copy of the Constitution and not even notice it.
All right. Well, Shruti, one of the other things that Griffin seems to want to do with some of his, I guess, pocket money is propel this previously obscure local politician into the governorship. What can you tell us about that?
So Ken Griffin has contributed close to $50 million or so to Richard Irwin's campaign. Richard Irwin is the mayor of Aurora, which is the second largest city here in Illinois. But this isn't the first time that Ken Griffin has stepped into Illinois politics and contributed a lot. If we just rewind back to a couple of years ago in 2020, he spent about that much money or a little bit more in, countering the graduated income tax. And you had alluded to income taxes earlier in the segment. And so, I mean, this is something that, you know, he has contributed to the themes and different things of Republican politics here in Illinois for a while.
And Dave, he also was a backer of Bruce Rauner, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, his track record was that he supported Rauner in 2014 and then again in 2018, and combined over those two races, it was around $36 million. One other little piece of the playground that he's been in is the, in 2020, there was also a big retention battle on the Illinois Supreme Court that he put money into about $11 million to defeat a Democratic justice, longtime former chief justice, actually, of the court, Tom Kilbride, and was successful at doing that. You know, I mean, this amount that he's committed to Richard Irwin, $50 million, is the most that he has committed to a single candidate out of the nearly $180 million that he's put into Illinois politics over time. But he has a lot riding on this. There's a lot of a lot of prestige riding on it. And, you know, people just sort of assume that Richard Irwin, because he has that, you know, access to that capital, is the odds on favorite. But if this race turns south, then it's a lot of egg on Ken Griffin's face. And that's going to be very hard for him to explain. And certainly $50 million is no amount to sneeze at, even if you, are a billionaire worth, you know, multiple billions as he is.
Dave, what do we know about how he chose Richard Irwin? Because, I mean, that's what it seems like, right? Richard Irwin denied last year. No one was really talking about him being a candidate for governor. And the one time he was asked, he said he had no interest in it. And then suddenly here he is leading the ticket.
Well, it stems back obviously to this grudge that he has against Pritzker. I mean, he famously declared last year that he was going to be all in toward defeating Pritzker this year, and called the governor's handling of the crime issue in Illinois a disgrace. And you know what's kind of interesting about all of that is that, you know, the governor does have levers of power when it comes to, you know, crime on the streets here by virtue of what legislation he signs or vetoes. And there was a big crime bill that came through the General Assembly here a couple of years ago that obviously moved the needle in ways that Republicans didn't like. But I think in terms of, you know, the profile of the candidate, I think Irwin was looking for somebody that would have this ability to, hit at Pritzker's soft spots in the general election and be able to get out of a primary that would be controlled by Trump voters. And I think right now that's where Irwin is really, really having to walk a tightrope. I would say, you know, not entirely successfully, where he, is having not to go too far to the right on things like abortion, on Donald Trump. that will come back and bite him in a general election against Pritzker. So, I think we don't know publicly about how this vetting process worked, where Griffin decided that Irvin was the one, but you can just sort of deduce that, you know, you have a candidate here who comes from the second largest city, as has been pointed out, who comes from the collar counties, which are vote rich, and that propelled Pritzker to victory in 2018, and who was African American, and that could eat into a constituency, a traditional Democratic constituency, that Pritzker might be counting on. So, I mean, on paper, the Irvin pick looks good, but whether in the end it's going to be enough, I think the jury is still out on that.
Well, we'll have an answer to that in 19 days. We need to take a break on our program. We're going to continue our conversation about Ken Griffin, what he wants out of Illinois government and politics. Coming up after a short break, you're listening to The 21st Show. If you want to join us, 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. More to come. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about Ken Griffin, Illinois' wealthiest man. He has a fortune worth $29.3 billion. He's a big philanthropist. He's given a lot of money to various institutions and causes, including the Museum of Science and Industry, which is going to be taking his name in a couple of years. And he's also spending big in Illinois politics. As we heard before the break, he gave a lot of money and helped defeat the graduated income tax constitutional amendment that was a centerpiece of Governor Pritzker's agenda. And he's also backing big, to the tune of tens of millions of dollars, the candidate and Aurora Mayor Richard Irvin, who is seeking the Republican nomination for governor in Illinois to challenge the likely Democratic nominee, all but certain Democratic nominee, J.B. Pritzker, the incumbent governor this fall. We're speaking about this with Dave McKinney of WBEZ. He covers state politics and government there. And Shruti Singh, who's a Chicago-based reporter and editor with Bloomberg News. Steve Daniels, senior reporter at Crain's Chicago Business. And Felix Salmon, chief financial correspondent at Axios and the host of the Slate Money podcast. And perhaps this is a good time to note, I've invited Griffin on The 21st Show a couple of times now. He's declined once, hope springs eternal. He does seem to talk with Bloomberg and others in the financial press every so often, including at an event at the Economic Club of Chicago last fall. Let's listen to an excerpt of what he had to say.
Since I last spoke in 2013, 25,000 of my fellow Chicagoans have been shot. And it is a disgrace that our governor will not insert himself into the challenge of addressing crime in our city. It is a disgrace. I was on a call with him back in the height of the civil unrest and arguing with him to declare a state of emergency to deploy the National Guard. Now, the governor and I don't really get along in very much, as you might imagine, given some of the ballot initiatives that haven't gone his way. But I told him to deploy the National Guard, and he goes, it won't look good for there to be men and women on Michigan Avenue with assault weapons. If that saves the life of a child, I don't care. And he doesn't care. So we have our work cut out for us because we have a government in our state that continually puts votes in front of people, votes in front of lives, votes in front of schools, and we need to start to take the state back inch by inch from people that put their politics first and put our people second.
All right, Shruti, you recently had a story that quoted Griffin as saying he was losing patience with Chicago and Illinois over crime, or maybe we should call it disorder. He said he witnessed an incident outside his office on a weekend last month. When the Capital Facts blog, Rich Miller, followed up, Griffin's spokesman pointed to this Facebook video. Let's listen to that.
They finna get run over by these civilian cars, bro. Look. Look at this, yo. So they ain't throwing nothing at that car because the car was waving at the machine. They throwing chairs. I don't know how the f*** they getting hold of chairs. They throwing chairs and everything at cars. One car almost just ran y'all kid over, bro.
All right, Shruti, can you say more about what Griffin told you for that story?
So he spoke with one of my colleagues in New York, and one of the things that he's highlighted as a point in many different discussions has been that crime is a concern. Another thing that he's talked about is that education is a concern, and political leadership is something that he's highlighted multiple times too. In that conversation recently in New York, he did mention that he's concerned about political leadership and crime, and he pointed to the likes of Detroit, for example, where he noted the deterioration in that city based on these various factors, including the lack of political leadership at that point. So, and he's sort of pointed to Illinois, as he said, as kind of a case study for these concerns that he's highlighted.
He compared Detroit to Ukraine, didn't he? Am I misremembering? Was it Afghanistan? I may be mixing up the metaphors.
So he talked about the deterioration in the buildings particularly. But, you know, I think the symbolism that he's pointing to is that he's concerned, and I'm just paraphrasing here from what he said, but he's just concerned about the political leadership and what that might then lead to.
Steve, you've written a lot about Griffin's politics over the years. Pensions is a big issue for him, right? He wants to see major changes to the state pension system.
Yeah, although I think that is taken a back seat in recent times to crime and political leadership. I will say the comparison to Afghanistan was actually one he made regarding Chicago in that Economic Club address, which was really where he threw down the gauntlet on all of this. And the biggest, apart from all of the money that he has invested in unseating J.B. Pritzker, he's also threatened to move Citadel out of Chicago, which is, if anything, maybe a bigger threat in some respects, because Citadel really is the preeminent financial services, certainly investment-oriented financial services company in Chicago. It's kind of a little bit the only game in town. So, but yes, pensions has been, fiscal issues, fiscal responsibility has been on his agenda. But I think, as Shruti said, education and crime right now are at the top of the list.
Dave, you've had a series of stories this year looking at a specific category of investments, speaking of Citadel and Citadel Securities, and how they relate to crime in Chicago. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was something that I started poking around on after the comments you played from the Economic Club, where he went after Pritzker and called the governor's reaction on crime a disgrace. And the disclosures that Citadel Securities files quarterly with the Securities and Exchange Commission, you know, give a real, you know, portal into the portfolio that Citadel and its market making cousin Citadel Securities have. And what, you know, in digging around in those filings, you know, there are gun and ammunition makers that the hedge fund and the market maker have holdings in. And, you know, the Griffin's spokesperson, you know, has said that, you know, it's really a naive kind of way to look at this, because as a market maker, Citadel Securities has no choice but to be in this sector, because, you know, the clients they have, the Robin Hoods of the world, the Ameritrades, whoever, you know, when you're punching an order in on your phone and you want to buy 100 shares of Smith & Wesson stock, then most typically Citadel is the one filling that order. And so they have to have a, you know, a supply of these stocks at the ready. But, you know, as I dug deeper into that kind of concept, I mean, I talked to people who wrote, you know, college securities text, you know, securities law textbooks that they teach in college, and other experts in the field. And it's like, if Citadel really wanted to, they wouldn't need to be in the gun and ammunition sector if they chose not to. And there are activists in town, the father, Michael Flager, being one of them, who took Griffin to task for, you know, how is it on one hand, crime can be such a significant an issue. And on the other hand, your company is dealing in a sector and holds shares in these companies like Smith & Wesson and Sturm Ruger and several ammunition companies, Ammo Inc., for example, at a value of $139 million as of March 31st. How is that possible? And, you know, the interesting thing about the gun piece of this, you know, there are two publicly traded firms, Smith & Wesson and Sturm Ruger. And I sent out an open records request to the City of Chicago Police Department to, you know, basically look at 5 years worth of data about homicides and other violent crimes and what kinds of weapons were recovered from those crimes. And 1 in 4 weapons that were recovered from homicides, for example, were made either by Smith & Wesson or Sturm Ruger. And so the contradictions there are what they are. And one little kind of footnote to all of this kind of work is that, you know, after the school shooting in Texas, I just took a look at what these securities were doing, you know, inside the Citadel portfolio, and they've been on a little bit of high. I mean, the sector itself has gone up because that's typically what happens after these mass shootings. People get fearful that the government's going to take away guns and then go out and buy a bunch of guns, and that drives up the value of the stocks. Well, that's happened here as well. And, you know, on the 24th of May, Citadel's holdings were valued at $153.8 million in the sector. And today they're at $164 million. So they've gone up. So, I mean, that's kind of the crux here. I mean, I don't know, the Citadel has dug in very deeply about doing anything about this, but the activists in town that work on violence every day are very unhappy about it.
All right, 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation, which is going to be coming to an end in a few minutes here. So last chance, 800-222-9455. We're talking with Dave McKinney, Shruti Singh of Bloomberg, Dave McKinney of WBEZ, Steve Daniels of Cranes, and Felix Salmon of Axios and the Slate Money podcast, 800-222-9455. Felix, you have I know you've talked on your program about Citadel Securities and their relationship with Robin Hood. What do you think of this idea of, you know, activists in the gun space calling for the firm to stop doing business with, you know, arms manufacturers?
So I'm kind of Team Citadel on this one. I have to admit, I'm not a Ken Griffin apologist by any stretch, but he's, you know, a market maker, and I don't think it's fair to say that the value of his stocks went up, because the way that Citadel Securities works is that it's basically neutral in terms of the market. It, you know, it tries to end every day with a neutral position. It shouldn't really be exposed to the broad market, whether it goes up or down, or even individual stocks, whether they go up or down. It trades trillions of dollars worth of stocks every year, every quarter, and what you get in these filings is a tiny little snapshot of what it held at like 1 millisecond at the end of the quarter, which is not representative necessarily of what's happening like 1 second later or 1 day later or anything like that. You can't extrapolate. It's not like he's holding on to these stocks as like a long-term investment. What he does is he enters into very lucrative deals with people like Robin Hood, as David mentioned, and he basically says, whatever your customers want to do, I will take the opposite of that trade. If they want to sell their gun stocks, I will buy. If they want to buy the gun stocks, I will sell. And then I will turn around and into the stock market and just unload or buy back whatever I need to be more or less flat. So he's constantly buying and selling, and the gun makers themselves don't really benefit or lose out from that activity. All that happens, as far as they're concerned, is that there's a slightly more liquid market in their stock, which means it can go up more easily, it can go down more easily.
I guess Robinhood would have to decide that they were not going to allow people to trade in those particular securities, right? In arms manufacturing.
I think that would be extremely difficult, and I'm not even sure that would be legal.
Yeah. All right. I want to, in the time we have remaining, I want to talk about Griffin's potential ambitions himself. Steve, you had a story not long ago with a great headline and graphic, Citizen Ken. Do you think we'll ever see Griffin's name on a ballot?
That's a really good question. You know, I was reporting that story as almost a thought exercise when in the middle of it, he told the Wall Street Journal, yeah, I'd like to potentially run for office someday, which surprised me and also surprised, I think, a lot of people who have worked for him, know him, et cetera. So it made that the whole exercise a lot more realistic.
Do you remember the New York Times story? I think it was Nick Confessori who wrote it in like 2015. And it kind of portrayed a group of billionaires, millionaires in Chicago talking about, okay, which one of us is going to take the short straw and run for governor? And it seemed like Rauner got it. That was my sort of like really brief take on that article. So yeah. You're right. I guess it is surprising that Ken Griffin would want to put himself out there like that, maybe.
I think it is. And if you talk to people who, like I said, who've worked for him or know him, I think they're still betting against that ever happening, despite what he said. All of that, you know, let's take the man at his word. He has said, yeah, that's something I'd like to do someday. I think if you spin this out, and Richard Ervin is not successful in this election, whether it's in the primary or in the general, then, and J.B. Pritzker is reelected. Here's the scenario where I see it being a possibility is that Pritzker then runs for a third term. Citadel either, so Griffin either has to make a decision, okay, I'm pulling Citadel out of Chicago, which he may do, or make the decision, I'll just do this myself instead of putting people out front and financially backing them. I think I'm smarter than them anyway. I am very passionate about these things. He has been so public in ways that he hadn't been before the last year or year and a half or so, that makes you have to think that, yeah, this isn't something he wants to do tomorrow, but I think it's on the agenda.
Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. I suspect, regardless of what happens, this is not going to be the last time we're talking about Ken Griffin in the context of Illinois politics. Steve Daniels, Dave McKinney, Felix Salmon, and Shruti Singh, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
More to come after a short break. Stay with us.